Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, it was an all-time party week, fully back at TPC Scottsdale, and madness ensued on the 16th hole. Plus, the Saudi oil money gets mentioned in a rules controversy, and there's all sorts of rumors bubbling. This is an erupting volcano story that we're going to dive into a little bit more. Plus, we're tuned into a new comedy and the Olympics ongoing. And this week's guest, a twofer. First off, Jeff Ritter, our content boss. You know him from The Morning Read and Sports Illustrated. We catch up on all things golf at the PGA Show. And a couple of short clips from a great chat we had with PGA Pro Ben Pelicani as well. We end with our Super Bowl props recap and talking cake and all things sweet when we always end with food. All of it brought to you by our friends at Club Dr. Golf, the number one golf club care solution. They've got two great products, soon to be three, that all help keep your club squeaky clean and ready to go. They've got the spray and the polish solution. Both work very nicely to keep the clubs crystal clean. That unmistakable shine, when you look down, it gives you that little extra confidence you need. But more importantly, for hard stats, it includes club performance, ball spin, ball speed, and control as well. So bring your clubs back to life and restore their original shine with Club Doctor. They do giveaways all the time on social media, so be sure to follow them on Instagram. They're Amazon's choice for golf club polish and ours as well. Check out clubdoctorgolf.com. Use code COL for 15% off any purchase at clubdoctorgolf.com.
Interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Box Golf, Tosi Snacks, Club Dr. Golf, and Volvic. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, how much beer did you drink this weekend?
I mean, nowhere near enough compared to what I saw on my television. Yeah. Even it being Super Bowl weekend, that was no match against the party that was the WM Phoenix Open, like really fully back. Last year, there were some fans there, but obviously wasn't quite the same, but definitely fully back, especially at the 16th hole, too.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. Let's start with the 16th hole, because on Saturday we had a pretty epic ace from Sam Ryder. And you know, everyone who had a can of beer in their hand decided to then empty it into the air and then throw said can onto the green or surrounding said area, which was also particularly hilarious since the Phoenix Police Department was recording a live video at the time about making sure not to drink and drive. But they stuck with it, and they still had a great little video there, which was maybe a better call than what we got on CBS. So Sam Ryder really kind of cleaned up there. And then the next day we got treated to it again when Carlos Ortiz decided to drain one as well.
Yeah, a couple of beer showers. Sam Ryder's ace on Saturday probably occurred at maybe the drunkest day in professional golf. I would contend. No, I won't contend. That's a definite point. It is. So it was an amazing moment. It's one of those things where, you know, you saw the beer being thrown, and I laugh and I love the party. It is also blatant littering that was kind of annoying to watch, but the whole spectacle of what was going on and just the mere fact that this crowd could erupt like this at a golf tournament, again, this is at a golf tournament, shows you how far the game has come in 2022, that at the right venue, with the right atmosphere, you can attract an extremely young, chaotic, and excited crowd that brings the sport to a brand new level that a lot of us older golf folks have never seen before. So call it whatever you want, whatever you think of the celebration, negative or positive. It's enlightening, and it's pretty cool to see when it happens.
Yeah, it really was. I think we've reached that age when we're old, when we also watch that and we go, that's pretty cool. I'm glad I'm not there and being
yes,
a part of that.
I know. And I don't get me wrong, I love going to the WM Phoenix Open. But yeah, being in the throngs of it at 16, I said on Twitter, like, I still want to be there, but my time is coming to an end very soon. I can feel myself being that old guy, you know, yelling at the TV, being like, I'm so glad I watched it. I'm watching at home and not there. But shout out to the fans who are going absolutely nuts. There were some fun moments indeed. Not only the beer showers, we had a couple of shirtless moments from Joel Damon and Harry Higgs on Sunday. You mentioned that second ace from Carlos Ortiz was a really cool one as well, too. And this is just the moment, and we have this conversation every year. This is just the dude golf. Just have fun, like let loose. And that's exactly what gets done every year in Scottsdale. And this year was no exception.
Yeah, indeed. It is one of the most raucous crowds in golf and one of the most entertaining holes to watch every year. And we always ask why we don't get to see this at other courses. I think all the beer cans on the green also kind of answers our question as to why we don't get to see this at other courses and other events.
Shout out to Waste Management. Right? Aren't they the perfect company to clean up a mess like that?
Yeah,
so they were ready for any occasion. I love that they just started squeegeeing the beer cans off the green. Something I didn't think I'd be saying here on this podcast, but we were squeegeeing beer cans off of the green at a professional event. I love it.
And let's talk too about just what was probably one of the most spectacular Sundays we've had in a while at a golf tournament. The level of play that we got to see all weekend was pretty phenomenal, and the names that were in play throughout this entire weekend. And I want to talk about Thigale though, because how many golf fans out there are now rooting for this kid every time someone who has no tour status in any capacity and comes in here on a sponsor exemption, the dream. And almost wins. I mean, this was pretty spectacular.
This was a really cool story. Sahith Theegala, a recent graduate of Pepperdine, young up-and-coming player that's just on that Monday Q circuit, Mike. You know, he's one of those guys that's right in our stratosphere that's on the edge of status at all times, and he's worked his way up the ranks and got this sponsor's exemption recently in the last couple of weeks, and he took full advantage of it. Top 10 gets him in next week. And to the next tournament, there's all sorts of good things coming his way soon. But yeah, it's very refreshing to see a player really pour his heart out on his sleeve. You know, we tend to sometimes be stuck in the era of these slightly emotionless stone cold killers, your Justin Thomas's, Dustin Johnson's, Colin Morikawa's, and they're great in their own aspect, Mike, because of how well they get it done and how surgical they are. But it's fun to see a guy that literally is pouring his heart out on his sleeve when he plays golf. And that's definitely what you saw from Sahith Theegala. So definitely a name we want to get to know.
Yeah. And you know, if we didn't see him doing it on the course, we certainly saw him do it when he was hugging his parents after he finished his round. You know, I hope that he continues to play at this level and recognizes just how fantastic he did out there, because it was pretty incredible to watch. And like you said, it's nice to see someone that is so emotional out there and is really enjoying the moment, because we ended up seeing a playoff between Scottie Scheffler and Patrick Cantlay, and Cantlay is pretty unemotional out there. I've never been a big Cantlay fan in general. And Scottie Scheffler, who's been named, we've heard a lot. I was honestly surprised that I had forgotten that he had never won on tour until he was able to win in this playoff.
Yeah, he's basically done everything but went on tour. He's had close calls at majors. I had a fun week with him last year when he made that run at the match play here in Austin. He got all the way to that championship match and lost to Billy Horschel in the final. That was a cool run. He beat John Rahm on the way. He's been playing golf amazingly for the last going on 18, 24 months now. It was only a matter of time before he got it done. What a cool setting to get it done. Unfortunately, I know a lot of people are saying out there, you know what? I ended up missing the end of this because it went into the Super Bowl. And this does tend to happen when you get a playoff in Scottsdale on Super Bowl Sunday. But it was impressive to see Scheffler outlast Cantlay in the playoff. And yeah, long overdue for that first win.
It was. And I saw a question brought up that is worth bringing up here. I saw this on Twitter. Why was the playoff not done on 16?
I know. Isn't that just like right on the tip of your nose answer for the tournament committee?
Mm-hmm.
Is that just laziness? They just want to keep it 18, you know, just keep it close to clubhouse. Not even bother with securing 16 and bringing that mess back for 15 more minutes. Like, they don't even want to entertain that, I guess. That's probably my thought process.
We also saw how incredible it is to watch just a par three being played over and over and over again. In the original match between Tiger and Phil, when they just played that par three until the sun came up the next morning. So that would have been a pretty phenomenal ending. Still, we got to see them play 18 and Scheffler notched his first win. I think we'll see Scheffler again in the winner's circle this year. I'm going to call it right now. He's going to win again this year.
Yeah, definitely due for more from him. He's going to be a name to watch out for. Obviously, we saw him come through at the Ryder Cup as well, too. So he's going to be on the American Golf radar for a while. Shout out to Scotty Scheffler, the Texas Longhorn, getting it done.
That's right. Let's talk about one other story that kind of stole the show earlier in the weekend, and that was Charlie Hoffman. And this will be a great segue to our next thing as well. So let's talk about Charlie Hoffman and break it down for us, Alex. What happened?
Yeah, and I can break this down in 30 seconds for the people that don't need to do the entire rehashing through Instagram. But basically, Charlie Hoffman hit his ball near a water hazard, dropped the ball. The ball rolled into the water hazard. Unfortunately, some of the rules of golf are just a little classical and need to be updated. That's a penalty again if the ball rolls back in. It doesn't matter what he does to it. So he got penalized twice and got pissed off about it. So there were other things he could have done to avoid that. He could have placed the ball 80 yards back and avoid the ball rolling in the water, whatever. But regardless, he decided that he didn't want to bring this up with the tournament chair or talk to the commissioner or anything like that. What do athletes do when they're pissed off and they want their way?
They go to social media.
They just blast everyone in the world and just go scorched earth on everyone and just start and just complaining to everyone you can. That's how it works these days.
Yeah. So Charlie Hoffman tagged also in this post, like everybody, including the Saudis, right? I think it was.
Yes, so, including the Saudi International, the golf tournament. They all sketchily went to play a couple weeks ago and they ditched Pebble Beach. Yes, that one. Yeah.
So is Charlie Hoffman one of the quote unquote 17 pros that are headed to this brand new Saudi tour?
That's the number I'm hearing, Mike. There's a lot of lava bubbling at the top, at the crevice of this volcano right now. It's right there. I can feel the breadcrumbs falling one by one right now. The dominoes, however you want to put it. This is a news story on the brink right now. There are leaks of Bryson DeChambeau taking that gigantic cash offer we discussed that is upwards of $100 million and potentially not being on the PGA Tour for the foreseeable future and maybe playing his golf somewhere else.
As I said last week, I have no problem with that.
Yeah, I know you don't. There's a lot of people that don't that I've texted as well. They're like, fine. Good riddance. Just kick him on the way out. But regardless, it's a very intriguing storyline now. If this actually does fall true, there's rumors that several other players have already gotten and received offers and are very interested in taking the Saudis up and playing this potential new Saudi World Tour being created by Greg Norman. It's got backings of Donald Trump money where Trump golf courses could potentially be used as venues around the world. And Saudi princes are shaking hands sketchily behind the 18th green with players, making them offers they can't refuse. Mike, this is as salacious and OK magazine tabloidy as golf can possibly get right now.
Yeah, this is pretty crazy. And you know, it's all... I don't see how there's money to be made here with how much money they're throwing at these players just having them come play. And then they're going to win money on tour, right? There's still money to be won on this new tour.
In theory, this is like a 12 to 18 event tour that takes up maybe half their current schedule. And they're told kind of when and where they got to play. And they got to play by that schedule. However, they're making an exorbitant amount of money to go along with that, basically.
Yeah. And you know, I think it's just dumb. But let's go down the rabbit hole.
Let's play this out and tell me who's jumping ship, really.
Let's put on our metal tin hats. So we know Bryson is going. Bryson's gone. Now, with Bryson going, we also can rule out one player who we know won't go, and that's Brooks. We know Brooks is staying on the PGA Tour, and I love that because I want that.
All right, even here's one that's going. Justin Johnson. Blonde
hair, he's gone.
I'm adding Justin Johnson to the list. Let's make the list now. Justin Johnson's added to the list, shaking hands, friends with Trump, well-documented, big Saudi guy. He paved the way for the trip to Saudi Arabia. I'm adding him to the list. Who else do you want to add?
I hate to say it, but it just looks, I'm reading the writing on the wall. Phil is going. Phil Mickelson is going.
And that's the one I think that would really rattle some cages.
Because I think Phil is the one where it's like, if Phil goes, others will follow. And that's what I think is even worse about it. Like Bryson going is not going to, Dustin Johnson going, maybe we'll get people think about it. Phil jumping ship, I think, is what will get people to really go, So
yeah, that's a shaky one. If he goes, that definitely rattles some cages. I'll let you think of another name. I'll throw a few European names that have been mentioned to have already received these lucrative offers. And these are guys, you notice they're all kind of in the twilight of their career. Maybe it's time for them to cash in one more time. They realize they're not quite the world-class player they once were. And this is an opportunity for them to get, you know, one more limelight exposure and payday. Justin Rose is a name that's been thrown around as potentially interested. Ian Poulter has received a lucrative offer, allegedly in the $30 million range. Mike, that's right. Ian Poulter is being handed $30 million just to play in this tour, potentially. Lee Westwood, another name that's being thrown around, a guy that's in his 40s, twilight of his career, plays a lot overseas already. So that's a sampling of the names that I'm seeing in the rumor mill right now for this potential Saudi tour.
Yeah, well, a couple other names that I wouldn't be surprised if they jump ship and wouldn't really mind either. Patrick Reed. I don't know if he will. He just signed a brand new endorsement contract. I don't know if he'd be able to jump ship with that right now. But, you know, it certainly wouldn't surprise me if he did. And you know, maybe even like a Jason Duffner, you know, some of these guys that were hot for a while and aren't anymore, maybe if they got a little bit of money guaranteed and they decided to go, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, he's a major champion that carries weight around the golf world. Sergio Garcia is a name I'll throw out on that list, you know, not afraid to travel, plays a world game already. Harold Varner just had the week of his life in Saudi Arabia. I don't think he has much bad to say about Saudi Arabia.
No, so probably not.
They might throw the bag at him too, but this is going to be an interesting one to follow. We had some breadcrumbs in the last couple of weeks, but we're now seeing that there are interviews that are potentially going to be released here. Maybe by the time these words are spoken into existence sometime this week, we're going to get a lot more on this. So stay tuned for the gossip.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about our play over this past week or so.
Are we getting any offers from the Saudis, do you think, for our play?
I'm not.
Yeah.
You probably not. I'm not. If they want a hacker who is just gonna not even make it through 18 on the first day, they can come to me. But no.
Yeah, you'd be the subject where like here's average golfer. Let's show you what average golfer really shoots on a professional layout just to scare the crap out of everyone, right? You'd be that subject,
much,
I think.
Pretty much.
So yeah, our average golf games were on display and for the world to see as well too. Not just you and me, Mike. The world can now see it and they can join us in the challenge as well too. We're playing through the D3 app. The D3 golf app is a really cool way to wager through a golf app. They handle the money. You can take money in and out. It's a revolutionary way to match handicaps up and match courses up too. Well, what I loved is that you and I were able to play a remote match from over 1,000 miles away. You know, we don't get to play golf together anymore, but this allowed us to do that. And I thought that was neat in and of itself.
Yeah. And not only that, like you said, it takes handicaps into account. So I was able to play my game with my sky high handicap and you were to play your game with your much more manageable handicap, let's say. And just keep track of scores, playing at different courses and different days and different times and everything. And really, really loved it. At the end of the day, Alex, I was the better player.
Yeah, you beat me, which was a little surprising to me, but I kind of reviewed the math on how it all worked, and it makes a lot of sense. I won the front nine in our Nassau. You can do several different formats within the app as well, too, and put money in and whatnot on the D3 app. We did a Nassau, so front and back in total. I did win the front against you, but you got me on the back, and you got me on the total, and it's really all about what holes you perform best on. Those holes where you were getting a stroke on me, Mike, you really double down and play your best golf when you needed to. So it's the beauty of handicapping and the handicapping system in golf is that apps like D3 allow golfers of all skill levels to compete against each other. And I enjoyed it. And I got another challenge coming up with the founder of the company, Tom, as well. So check out the D3 app if you want to join in on the fun and feel free to challenge me as well.
I do want to add to just one extra thing from my round where I'm really patting myself on the back. Never mind that I beat you, was I had a really wonderful, like 50 foot downhill putt that I drained. It was just, wow. It was for like double bogey or something, but still that fifth, huge putt.
That's like a once in a decade made putt, a 50 footer. Yeah. Jesus.
And I will say, I did walk it in at the very end. So,
oh man, a little tour sauce too. Nice work, Mike. Yeah, every shot counts with the app. So, yeah, that was fun to play, and I look forward to future challenges with you. I wish I could just say I flaunt some sort of perfect record, but I'm not the member of the podcast that's going to be doing that for the immediate future.
That's true, you, Mike. That's true. I'm perfect first, and we'll stick with that. Let's switch on over to what's going on with the guys who are perfect almost every day, even when they're not perfect, and that's the PGA Tour. They're headed to the Genesis Invitational at Riviera. I mean, once again, a crazy field, though it is missing Bryson DeChambeau because he's taking his paycheck. No Bryson.
Fun note, shout out to our friend David of the show, who texted me earlier and said he remembers vividly Phil Mickelson did commit to the Genesis and playing Riviera in December. And now all of a sudden, Phil's not playing this week at Riviera amidst the obnoxious greed comments. Just pin that one. Put that in your back pocket for later. That's interesting. An interesting one to me.
That said, the guys that are playing include Patrick Cantlay, John Rahm, Justin Thomas, Xander Schauffele, Victor Hovland, Hideki Matsuyama, Rory McIlroy, Dustin Johnson, Colin Morikawa, Bubba Watson, Will Zalatoris. I mean, just everyone who's actually cares about the PGA Tour is playing this week. Cantlay, do you think Cantlay is ripe to win after the disappointment this past week in Scottsdale?
Yeah, I mean, California Cantlay. That's the nickname I've officially given him. So I'm gonna place that bet. Like, he's gonna be on my card. I'm at Course of Life One on Twitter. You're at MWRINC. As for picks, geez. Man, this is such a loaded field. You know, I'd love to think that this is the week that Victor Hovland says I can actually win in a non-tropical destination. Although I will say Riviera is pretty close to the beaches of California. It's not quite resort level, so I don't know if he's going to be able to win at this course because of that. That seems to be the deciding factor with him. But I'm going to put Hovland on my cart just because he's so hot. Hottest golfer in the world right now at this very moment is him. So those are two guys on my card. You usually don't have to go too far down for the list of champions based on world ranking here. Riviera, this is a tough track that always proves to be a real test. So that's why the world's best show up. And I'm looking forward to the action.
All right, let's switch over to Tuned In, where we share what we're getting into outside of the world of golf. Still Olympics going on. It's still the Winter Games. And this week we got to see Shaun White in his final half pipe.
Yeah, sad.
Do you remember an Olympics without Shaun White? That's how long he's been in this.
I really don't. I can't believe my wife didn't know that his nickname was the Flying Tomato. Maybe one of the greatest nicknames in all of sports, I would argue. The ginger that could. That guy's been flying through the air for better part of two decades now and just kind of been in our life as an extreme sports athlete forever. It's like him and Tony Hawk are like the two seminal figures of extreme sports in my life, basically. They're my goats and my god. So it was crazy to see the official end of the Shaun White era, this final Olympics, about to hang it up.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he finished just off the podium, but still, it was clear that he was really, really has enjoyed his run and really was soaking it in. Who did claim gold, though, was Nathan Chen, just breaking all sorts of records in men's figure skating. It's pretty incredible what he's been able to do on the ice.
Yeah, I still can't wrap my head around how just spinning four times in the air with the limited amount of time that they have up there off of ice is possible. I just don't get the gravity and the physics behind all that, but he's able to make quads look so freaking easy. It blows my mind. True athlete indeed. Shout out to Nathan Chen and Chloe Kim, the other snowboarder as well too, capturing gold as per you. So good stuff in the Olympics. I've been tuned in pretty well, especially now the football season's in the rear. I'll be watching a lot more this week.
Yeah, there's a lot more to catch, and we'll be talking about it again next week. One more week of this stuff, so we'll get it in.
Nice. Good stuff from Beijing. A series I tuned into recently is a funny one, very light. It's called Pivoting on Fox. And it's a story of three wives that are all in different directions in their life. And they're making big changes, Mike. One of them has decided she wants to start spending more time with her kids. So she's spending weekdays and afternoons with her kids, actually being mom full time instead of just passing it off to the nanny. That's hell for her. One's debating cheating on her husband with the trainer she works out with, hasn't done it yet. And the third one, Mike, went from a high paying job as a doctor to a job bagging groceries. So big pivots in life for those ladies. And I know you've had a pivot of your own recently, you know, switching career roles. How is mm-hmm. your pivot going? What was my question for you today?
You know, I would say that it is a journey and it is not going terribly. Is it going great? It's going in the right direction. Let's say that it's a big change going from retail to anything else. It's, you know, these Monday to Friday, man, I've been doing retail. I don't do Monday to Friday. This is killer. That's what's really kind of killer on this. You gotta wait till Friday before you have a day off.
The early part of the week, man. Really stinks, huh? Doesn't it?
Really? I understand why everyone's like, oh my God, it's finally Friday. I get it now. I get it.
Ooh, when that golf comes on Thursday morning, I'm like, yes, the weekend is within view. you're in that world now, but congrats on your pivot. Check out Pivoting on Fox if you want to see those ladies pivot through their life. It's a funny watch.
Let's get into this week's guest. Alex, when you were at the PGA Merchandise Show just a few weeks ago, you got to chat with really our boss. If we were to have one, it would be Jeff Ritter.
Yeah, our content boss, let's say, right? That's an accurate title. Yeah. Editorial director at Morning Read, who we shout out. We're part of the Morning Read Content Network proudly, and Sports Illustrated as well. And Jeff's got a huge history, not only with Sports Illustrated, but the game of golf. It was nice to actually meet him in person. We've talked over Zoom before, you and I have, but with Jeff, but I connected with him at the show and we caught up on all things Morning Read and what's going on in the world of golf as well.
And we'll have that full conversation in just a moment. But first, let's talk about the Volvic golf ball, because I played with this guy once again this weekend, and I really do love playing with a yellow golf ball, but to have one like the Volvic that also just plays really well and is true and has great feel, I love this golf ball, Alex.
Are you trying to tell me that you walked in the 50-foot putt with a Volvic XT Soft?
I did.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. God, the filmer in me wishes I got that on tape. God, man. Highlight for the ages right there. Shout out to the XT Soft, though. But so the ball's coming through for you. Fly nicely last Saturday when you were out there?
Yeah, I thought overall it was doing really well. You know, when I was hitting the ball correctly, that's key number one.
You do have to hit the ball correctly as well, too. Yes. The ball's nice in and of itself, but you actually do have to put a decent swing on it as well. That's yes. Part two.
That is. I thought it was running great, had good consistent feel around the greens, and that's really important to make sure you're having that nice touch to it. And it obviously was running true enough for me on the crappy greens that I was playing on, and was able to drop in for me from 50 feet away. And that's can't ask for more than that. Love and it. Of course, it's got the great bright yellow color, so you can see it really easily when you're in the woods or in the brush, which, you know, happened a couple times for me, so I was able to find it really easily. It's just easier to see it than a white golf ball, which I think just kind of gets lost in everything. So when you're looking for something that'll give you great color and great play, then you definitely need to be looking at what Volvic has to offer. Instead of them spending all their money on marketing, they're going to go ahead and put it into their golf ball, so they have the best high performance balls in golf. You can check them out for yourselves at Volvic.com. Again, that's Volvic.com. Volvic, it's performance in color.
All All right, next up on the tee, we're live from the PGA Show for the Course of Life podcast here with a friend who I'm glad we could finally connect with in person as well, too. He heads up content for the Buffalo Agency and the podcast network we're part of with the Morning Read and Sports Illustrated. It's Jeff Ritter joining us. Jeff, great to see you. How is everything?
Alex, nice to see you outside of a Zoom box, outside of my computer screen. It is good to be here.
Yeah, good to connect indeed. So give everyone a little bit of background on the Buffalo Agency, because they know what we do and the partnership we have with Morning Read and SI. But tell me specifically about Buffalo and how we all came to be.
Yeah, Buffalo is a full-service marketing agency. They have clients throughout the golf industry. One of the areas I think that makes them unique is their ownership of the Morning Read. They were an investor in Morning Read when it first launched as a newsletter-only product in 2017. Became full owners in 2019 and decided to make a website and make a media property out of it. So shortly after that, that's when I came on board. I was excited to join this kind of growing operation and really help build it, as you know, as shape it as best I could, and with the help of lots of people at the company and lots of partners, including this podcast, you know, putting pieces together and assembling something that's hopefully unique and fun for people to read and listen to.
That's awesome. And I know the origins of the Morning Read newsletter came from a figure that a lot of people remember from Golf Channel viewing days, and Alex Maselli. Talk to me about Alex, what he originally created. You know, he's one of those guys where I think he's a bit of ahead of his time. He was like one of the original pundits on the Golf Channel that really gave takes and whatnot. But just talk to me about the Alex and his origin.
Yeah, he's great. I would say this to his face if he was here. I think he's an entrepreneur at heart. I mean, he loves golf, loves the game, but he also loves building things. And so he built the Morning Read to be a newsletter. And for a lot of golf fans, probably listeners of the show would know Morning Read or remember Morning Read as something they would just get in their inbox that was often driven by Alex or Alex's friends writing columns. Alex is not afraid to rattle a few cages out there and share opinions. And we appreciate that too. So I'm also a journalist, and so I love, you know, bringing new ideas to the table. So, and from there, you know, Alex is still part of the Morning Read. He's a regular contributor, and we mix him into other new voices now, and just kind of taken what he started and continue to build up and build around that core. And that core really is originality. You know, that's probably the key. That's what I really appreciate about Alex and what he started and what we can try to continue with the project going forward.
That's awesome. Now, the really cool news that happened in the past year since we connected was obviously everything with Sports Illustrated and the Morning Read as well, too. How did that all come together? I saw it come together and was really excited about it, and it's done great things for our audience. But what specifically has been the best part about the Morning Read SI partnership so far?
I think it just fits together so well. I was part of Sports Illustrated for nearly a decade, part of the old SI Golf Group. So when Sports Illustrated approached Morning Read about a partnership, for me, it was just like, wow, what an opportunity to kind of have a homecoming of sorts and reconnect with a lot of old friends, editors that are still there, writers that are still there. But it also just fit business-wise, because we were growing quickly, we're doing new things, we had a lot of kind of, you know, fun projects involved in our website that golf fans were taking to and responding to. And Sports Illustrated is just this massive platform, but they didn't really have a golf, you know, dedicated golf daily coverage.
Right.
When I was part of the company, they had golf.com for that. Golf.com went out as part of kind of a mergers acquisitions thing, the whole timing company splintered off. And so Sports Illustrated, they wanted to get back into golf, but they needed some help to do it. And so it was just a natural fit. We felt like we were punching above our weight. We just needed some more eyeballs. We wanted to get what we were doing in front of more people. And so that's where the partnership is really, it's really benefiting both sides. It's been great.
That's awesome. It's a cool little collaborative that we're all part of here, Course of Life. A wide variety of personalities within the content network, Reese, Stick and Hack, all sorts of different, outlets that have different takes on the game of golf. What's been your goal kind of assembling the network and getting all of us kind of together under one umbrella?
I think it's really to stay original and not necessarily feel like it's just another golf site. I think the current mix of golf sites, everybody's doing great stuff. And so we just want to try to offer something where you click into SI Golf and take a look around. you're just seeing something that's a little different. And it just becomes kind of a destination. That the Morning Greek email continues to be a destination where golf fans still think, I got to check this out. Because what's in my inbox this morning isn't going to be waiting for me anywhere else. And same thing if you go to SI Golf. That's really, it also, I think, starts with that just originality idea.
Yeah, it's cool checking that newsletter first thing in the morning. It gets you everything you need to know. So definitely check us out on Morning Green SI, Buffalo Agency. Here with Jeff Ritter live at the PGA Show. I know you guys are always working on a lot of different collaborations and partnerships as well, too. I'm going to throw a few pitch ideas at you because I know you're hearing random ideas from me. So I'll give you three, and you can tell me which one you like the most, and then we'll talk after about how we can work it out. The first one, I am an unbelievable juggler with the wedge and a golf ball. Almost professional level. So Trick Shot Thursday is coming very soon to all of our Course of Life content. The second idea.
All right, hold on.
What are your thoughts about the trick shot?
I'm going to say,
I know we got
as a radio show, I'm going to pass.
Okay.
I don't see it as a great audio idea.
Yep.
Okay. Video idea, there's potential.
Yep. So the one that I'm already doing is the Circle of Life, where I do that hell circle of 6-foot putts at golf courses. So I've got that one going. But the third one I think you're really going to like is Course of the Lines. Talking about everything going on in the gambling and betting side of the game of golf as an aside to the podcast.
All right. Yeah, we're doing that type of content. There's potential there.
So tell me a little bit about that. So we'll follow up with that, but I want to get your take on betting and gambling within golf because that is really taking off right now in all sports because of the legalization, but how we can potentially attack that angle.
Golfers know gambling and betting is sort of part of golf culture. You know, if you're a golfer, you're probably not shy or not unfamiliar with the idea of making wagers out on the course. So I think this audience is into it. And so, you know, with the legalization of sports betting happening slowly state by state around the country, there's different laws in different places, but it's content. Everybody's embracing it now. You know, there was a time where I remember, you know, about 10 years ago, it was almost taboo to talk about it.
Right.
Mainstream sports.
Well, because we can only bet on illegal European sites, so now things have changed.
Yeah, you gotta go to Barbados or something to place a bet on a tour event, but obviously not anymore. So, certainly readers of SI Golf and Morning Read, they're noticing and taking to, you know, some of the gambling content we have. It's another reason the SI partnership is great because they have their own sports book. They've launched their own gambling partner. It's called 888 Casinos. And so that's another one, just like DraftKings and other places where some states you can make the bet, some states you can't. That will slowly, of course, ramp up over time. And it's a really nice, it's another layer of this partnership that works really well is because we can integrate ourselves with that and we'll do so even more over time.
Yeah, the intrigue around betting on the golf course, especially for professional events, I'm picturing a moment where you can bet on every single shot live, and we might not be that far away from it. So
that's wild, but I don't think that's that far out there, to be honest.
Crazy. Jeff, what are your goals when you attend a PGA show like this? I know everyone took a year off last year. It's good to see everyone back here and make some face-to-face connections, but what have you been able to accomplish, and what are you looking at?
Just appearing on as many podcasts as possible.
There it is.
I'm kidding. No, it's just a chance. It's nice to see as many people as I can in person. It's just like everybody. It's almost like cathartic in a way to just see everybody. A lot of people that have helped out with our project, a lot of partners, contributors, and just helping in different ways. But it's all been on Zoom, you know, or phone calls for a couple of years now. So it's just really nice to connect with people in person. And meet new folks for the first time, just find new ways to work together and see what people are up to. So just the whole face-to-face connection is something that, you know, I don't take that for granted anymore because it feels special in a way just to be able to do it now.
Sadly, it's surreal being back in the world right now and looking at everyone, but it's a good feeling indeed. Jeff, let's touch on some quick golf headlines that are going around the world right now. We'll start with the one that shook the internet most recently this week. Your thoughts on a blonde Brooks Koepka. Did you see that yesterday?
I think my thought is it's a pretty good move for the 2022 PIP bonus. and I wish him well because I think he's off to a great start for it.
Quite a rock star look indeed. Definitely fiance inspired there. The next one is obviously we're all wondering the future for Tiger. We saw him briefly at the father-son with Charlie. No one's really got any clue on his timetable right now. I mean, if you had to make a random prediction, when would you love to see him back?
I'd love to give you a scoop here on Course of Life.
I don't have any.
My inkling is just going by what I know of Tiger, and he's always said that St. Andrews is actually his favorite course in the world. And if you look at the four majors this year, St. Andrews is by far the most walkable. It's almost flat as a pancake. So I think that's the one I would circle where if a comeback were to happen this year, I think that's it.
Okay.
But I don't have any insight that that's really part of Tiger's timeline or, you know, that that's realistic. But that's the one in my head that I think if it's going to happen this year, I think that's where it's going.
Yeah, the walkability factor is big. That's a good little tidbit there. And then we love covering the women's game as well, too. I'm curious. LPGA is on fire right now. We call it the quarter tour affectionately because those sisters are just dominating. Who are some of your one, two, three favorite LPGA players you're calling right now?
I think the quarters are great. And, you know, the rivalries that are happening through them is, you know, it's really cool to see. But I think for an American audience, you know, and like a mainstream audience, I think the quarters have this appeal that could help them potentially start to cross over in the way that like a Michelle Wee crossed over or Paula Creamer sort of crossed over. And the fact that Nelly's reached number one in the world is huge. And I think there's extra energy around the tour. I think Danielle Kang is great. She won recently.
Love her personality.
I think the personalities help drive that tour. And I'm with you. I see the LPGA on an upswing. We're doing more coverage with it on Morning Lead this year, which we're excited about. And I think, you know, we're excited about where that tour's going. We're excited to bring more stories to life.
Definitely. Love the women's game right now. It's on fire. Let's finish with our 19th hole question. We love to ask it to all of our guests. When you get done with a round on the course and you get into your favorite clubhouse, the 19th hole, what's your go-to order for like a meal and a drink at the end of the day?
All right, let's see. Now, what time of year is it? Because that will alter the...
let's say it's a nice spring afternoon as our listeners are hearing this
right
now.
All right, so spring I'm going to go a little lighter. I would get like I would order up maybe a sole or like a light Mexican beer. Corona's fine, but I would take like sole. We got it. And then probably, you know, maybe like a seafood appetizer and then a burger. I'll go burger afterwards. Well, that's nice and cool.
Pretty well rounded American combo indeed, and I appreciate the seafood appetizer as well. Great answer, Jeff. Thanks for joining Course of Life. Really appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of show week.
Thanks, man. Good to see you.
That interview was brought to you by Desert Fox Golf, our friends of the show and the makers of the Phone Caddy. Alex, we're good friends with these guys at Desert Fox. You had the great pleasure of going out to the Waste Management Phoenix Open. It was last year, wasn't it? Last year, 2 years ago? I don't even know. Time has no meaning anymore. We saw them once again out there just this weekend.
Oh, yeah. Scott and the team are out there. It's good to see the full crowd back in effect, and the Phone Caddies were definitely being rocked. There's also like a million like pro-am tournaments that kind of go on in the Valley area around the whole Waste Management Week. So lots of networking to be had. And the Phone Caddies were definitely on display as well.
It's the perfect tool to keep your phone safe while you're driving in your golf cart and playing your round. Hooks right onto the side of the cart. Your phone slips right in. Super easy. And it's certainly one of my favorite golf accessories that I have. And we've certainly had our fair share recently of trying out different accessories. And this one is hands down my favorite. And you can save 10% and get your own Phone Caddy when you use the promo code Course of Life at DesertFoxGolf.com. You can get one in a range of different colors and even show your support with the Patriotic line. So again, head on over to their website. That's DesertFoxGolf.com. Use the promo code Course of Life to save 10%. Again, that's promo code Course of Life at DesertFoxGolf.com. And we're back. Great chat there with Jeff. Alex, do we need to do a rebranding so we can bring out Course of the Lines?
That idea stuck. There was a little bit of a laugh there, but I think it was like, this could actually work. We might, yeah. But first off, we really admittedly do need to be hitting some more winners with these PGA Tour bets.
My guys didn't even make the
betting content.
So. My guys didn't even make the cut this week, so I was way off base. And so I don't know what's going on.
Some more picks, though. Well, of course.
I know. Look, sooner or later, the odds will be in our favor. It's just, you know, how many winners did we have last year? Did we each have three or something?
We had seven total between two of us, seven or eight.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you stick with us, you'll eventually have a winner, and you'll probably come out ahead at the end of the year. So,
okay, we're going to try and lean into that golf betting content a little bit more, but nonetheless, really cool to catch up with Jeff and talk all things golf as well, too, and hope to see him at future PGA shows as well.
Mm-hmm. Also on the floor of the PGA show, are you able to meet up with Ben Palicani, who caddied for Mookie Betts at Pebble Beach?
Yeah.
Mookie Betts played a little baseball. He played for Oakland A's? The LA Dodgers.
Boston.
I think he played for some team in Boston. I don't know what he did.
But he's won some games to the Red Sox or something like that. I don't know, the World Series or two. But he said that he was very excited when I spoke with him. It was a week before Pebble, and I saw him a couple times in clips. Mookie Betts hit some unbelievable shots at Pebble Beach last week. Maybe a little bit due in part to this guest as well, who I got to meet on the show floor. But Ben's got a really neat background, not only as a PGA pro, but he teaches a very unique age. He's got a lot of high schoolers in his academy and his golf school that he teaches. Those kids that are right at that impressionable age, Mike, when they're getting really good with their game. And I want to share a clip that he had talking about his work that he does with these kids and how much different the high schoolers learning the game of golf are from what we were back in the day.
And so what we're doing now a lot with kids is we're having to teach them very different. For example, I love this generation. I'm also a middle school and high school coach at Lipscomb Academy. And this generation loves to know why. So it used to be you'd go to the lesson tee, and if a pro told you to do something, you just did it. You didn't even ask any questions, right?
And answer the questions.
Exactly. And this generation wants to know why, because they can, they'll go find you four case studies against whatever you say very, very quickly on Instagram or whatever they're using. And so I love this generation because when you can step into the why with them and they believe what you believe, then they'll run through a wall for you. And so a lot of what we do now is working with kids on what we were really good at growing up, which is how to play the game, curve a golf ball. And some of those things are getting harder because of technology. It's just harder to curve a golf ball now. So nowadays we have to teach a lot more play skills. We have to teach kids how to goof around a little bit more, whereas that came natural to us. But technically they're so much better because they have access to video. You talked about that. I remember when I first came out as a teacher 15 years ago, the best camera on the market was $5,000.
That's easy price point there.
Yeah. And it did not have the frame rate that's in my iPhone now. So to put that in perspective, right, every kid has the best camera 15 years ago that we used to have. So it is a really unique age group. You get to do some things with them because of technology that you didn't get to do before. I think a lot of teachers nowadays need to really think about how to meet these kids where they are.
You know, I really appreciate like kids are taking the time to investigate what they're being told and see let maybe it's correct or not correct for them. In this case, I think it's maybe going to work out for them if they listen to Ben. They're going to have some
conversation on the driving range. Excuse me, Ben, I actually found five videos on YouTube that contradict what you said in last week's lesson. Could you please explain? Something like that.
There's 20 billion different ways to play the game. You just got to pick one and stick with it.
Yeah. Definitely. But that was cool to hear his perspective on that. And then the other thing I wanted to share, which is really neat, from Ben Palakani, PGA Pro based in the Nashville, Tennessee area, is talking about kind of the last couple of years. Golf's had kind of a big renaissance. As much as the world shut down, golf stayed open in pretty much the entire world. And it was able to be a great rescue and respite for a lot of people that were just struggling with being inside and wanting to get out for fresh air. And there were a lot of interesting benefits that Ben talked about specifically for the game of golf here in the last couple of years.
So I think the first thing is, I think we got pushed into technology faster as an industry. You had to become more proficient using virtual lessons. I was talking to a young instructor the other day, and we were talking about different teaching stuff, and I said one of the things I suggested, and I said I'd also become very good at giving a virtual lesson. And he kind of said, well, why is that? Want to do that? I go, well, I don't either, but it's part of our industry now. And so I was fortunate in Tennessee, we didn't truly get shut down like other people. Right? We had to be outside, so I had to shut my garage door for a couple months. But luckily, we were able to get going a lot more than other places. So I was
getting to golf course.
Yeah, I was very fortunate. I know some of my other instructor friends in other states had tougher luck than I did, so I feel very fortunate to be in Tennessee, where we were able to teach the whole time. But yeah, I think being more proficient with technology is something that's come out of this. And then I think it also fits a little bit more into kind of some of my beliefs in teaching. I'm a big feedback believer. I kind of use the analogy, if we're going to teach little kids, and again, I got two of them, that if we're going to teach them how to write, we have them trace letters. The tracing of those letters are not just for the kid, they're also for the teacher or parent. It gives them a way to give productive feedback that if they did it right or wrong. And so training stations being a training aid, technology. The other day, it still blows my mind. There's a young man in Canada that I was giving a lesson. I use Google Meet a lot for these. And on the screen, he was fortunate enough to have TrackMan at his disposal. And so he had a TrackMan on the screen. We were live video chatting, and then I could screen record off of it, show him what I needed to show him, then visually stand in front of the camera, show him what I wanted to do. He had a couple training aids at his disposal. We had the TrackMan running to verify what we were doing was actually changing ball flight. I mean, the whole concept blew my mind, right?
Yeah.
So the idea that that is a part of our industry now, and I think means that anyone can reach any instructor. Before, that wasn't always
right. This is coming everywhere.
That is coming out of COVID.
Yeah.
And I think if we would have gotten there as an industry, I just think we got pushed, which I think is for the better.
You know, Alex, with COVID, all I wanted to do was get out there and play, because it's certainly something you could do outside, away from people, and just kind of get some activity in. And I certainly feel like I've started playing more since all this has started. And there's all these great things now where you can play with people without having to be next to people. You know, we already talked about the D3 app that we'll be talking about more over the next few months and everything. And there's just so many great reasons to go play the game.
It was so cool hearing Ben describe the virtual lessons he's been able to see and give in the last couple of years, and how that business has skyrocketed as well too. And you can use the phones. They can be the root of evil at points, but there's some moments when the phones are really good for use and to help communicate with people like that. Definitely a good indeed that's come, especially for the world of golf with technology. So neat to catch up with Ben, and looking forward to seeing more teaching content of his in the future as well.
And if you like kind of all the stuff we do here on this podcast, go ahead and give us a rating of, you know, like 5 stars on the podcast app you're using. Hit a thumbs up, smash that subscribe button, do whatever you got to do to show us your love and affection for us. If you don't love us and give us affection, then we're going to go to the Saudi tour. We're going to go do everything there instead.
Oh yeah, we have offers. People have been asking, Mike.
They have literally
a flood of DMs, but we're getting offers. Yeah. We're fielding offers right now from the Saudis.
Yeah, so. Literally being given $500 not to go to the Saudi tour. Literally,
they don't want us that bad. Wow,
they don't want that. Yeah, sorry, Alex. I meant to tell you that before we did this, but hey, let's talk about the Super Bowl, Alex. I have a question for you. How was it to watch a Super Bowl without Tom Brady in it?
is
what
weird,
that feel like
wasn't
for
it?
You?
I mean, for everybody, collectively.
And to know, he will never play in one again unless he unretires, which certainly could happen.
Oh,
but
yeah.
He will probably never play in
I
one
love
again.
How you said, which certainly could happen. I'm like, yeah, oh yeah, that's totally yeah, happening now, actually.
Yeah.
When I was retired, yes, it was a Tom Brady-free Super Bowl. It was Joe Burrow against Matt Stafford. Rams prevailed. Overall, I had a decent wagering weekend, bet the Bengals to cover, which they did. So shout out to Joe Burrow for keeping it close. And I had some pretty good bets with the props as well, too. I know we went over a bunch of them last week, but let's recount some of the highlights from Super Bowl Sunday.
Yeah, coin toss. We usually say tails never fails, right?
Oh, God. That was not a great start. That's usually a momentum for the day type of thing. That and the anthem. Fortunately, the anthem was great. I want to shout out Mickey Guyton because a lot of people didn't think she had the over in her. Okay. Her anthem times were very low. This was one of the lower over unders. This was disrespectful to Mickey Guyton putting the over under at 95 seconds. And she wanted to crush it. You could tell she didn't even get to the word brave by the time the over had already hit. So shout out to Mickey for belting it out in the national anthem.
That's right. Let's talk about Gatorade color, because I was not surprised and surprised all at the same time at what we saw when it was dumped on the Rams head coach there.
Yeah, blue for the Rams. I mean, I kind of bet in conjunction with the Bengals bet that it was going to be orange Gatorade. So I had to kind of lean on the side for that one specifically. It was blue indeed. So blue Gatorade bettors took home the cash there. Let's talk halftime show, Mike. Go on and on forever about this one. This was right up my alley, first of all. I literally grew up in the late 90s, early 2000s hip hop. That's like the music that shaped me as a music fan. So, of course, I was head over heels in love with this show. It hit all the right spots for me as a music fan. I'm curious what your perspective is. You're a little bit more of a casual hip hop fan than I am. What were your thoughts on the show overall?
Well, first of all, as casual a hip hop fan as I am, I was surprised at how many of these songs I knew and that they were, you know, maybe actually Dr. Dre songs.
The actual hits. I love that.
We did. 50 Cent, who looks like he's put on some weight, was an interesting cameo to see there as well.
Dollar? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. There you go. I like that. I will say there was a lot of talk that this was perhaps the greatest halftime show of all time that we got. While I think this was certainly maybe top three, Prince is still the number one halftime show.
Yes, I'm not going to go as far as to say this is the greatest halftime show. I totally understand. I think what this did do, which I appreciate, and we can carry this over to other genres of halftime shows as well too, is it's totally okay to have an ensemble halftime show. And it doesn't just have to be for hip hop. Like we could have like, it, you know, any name your genre, you could have a country music ensemble where it's Luke Combs and Chris Stapleton and different artists collaborating together and give them all their minute or two of shine. You could have a rock and roll ensemble with three or four different bands playing one or two songs each. I hope if anything, this maybe opened the doors for future shows like that.
Yeah, I think that would certainly be something different to see come out of some of these halftime shows as opposed to seeing a band try to roll through all their hits in 10 minutes and play like 30 seconds of each of their songs and no one get happy with it. So,
I like the variety. Give me the variety. My halftime bet winner was I bet that Eminem was going to come out on stage in a hoodie. I mean, I thought that was the easiest bet in the world, and that was an easy winner. I could never see him coming out on stage in anything but, and that's exactly what he did. So shout out to Eminem.
Let's also talk briefly about the commercials. Alex, how targeted did you feel with these commercials just diving deep into the nostalgia of our childhood of the 90s?
There was a lot. Yeah. Well, which ones are you thinking of specifically? There were a lot of throwbacks, though. I saw a lot of books, which I didn't expect.
We had a Scrubs commercial, which felt kind of triggered. We had that Coinbase commercial with the QR code bouncing around like the DVD logo that you'd get when you're in class and you're waiting for the teacher to put the movie in and you have the DVD logo bouncing around the screen. So that was interesting as well. And it was just
Sopranos commercial as well too with Meadow. That was a throwback to the 90s as well.
Yeah. There was there too. You know, I'm just waiting for the Seinfeld commercial to come in because that's really the next big step here.
I feel like we're detached enough that we can ironically have Seinfeld Super Bowl commercials and they can be funny and we can all reminisce for a day or two, right? We're about that time.
That's true. Yeah. I think we're about there.
Yeah. Great Super Bowl indeed. It was nice just to be a spectator. So good stuff all around.
That's hashtag always in with food.
Yep. Brought to you by our friends at Toasty Snacks, makers of Toasty Bites. A great, healthy, delicious, crunchy, shockingly good snack for you. Plus, they don't melt. You can keep them in your golf bag, gym bag, wherever. Put them on your golf bag for the course. Take them with you to work out. Throw them in your car. They're ready to go. Promo code COL20 at toasty.com/COL. I prefaced that healthy snack statement with, I found one of my favorite desserts. Okay. It was really by accident. It was at a Valentine's Day dinner last week. But what I want to ask about first, though, is something that you posted for your pregame golf course meal, which is something I haven't laid my hands or mouth on in at least a decade. And I was very jealous of your Saturday morning experience. So do tell me what that was.
Yeah, this was my second trip out to Rocky's New York style deli in Savannah. It's like on the other side of the city for me. It's kind of a hike to get over there. But they are really the only real New York style deli in Savannah, which means you get real corned beef, real pastrami. And in this case, something I really haven't had in a long time, a breakfast sandwich on a New York style hard roll. Which those of us from the area know what that means. A, it's not hard. And so I got a quarter pound of pastrami and egg sandwich, and it was fantastic. I felt the heart attack come and go, but it was worth it.
I just like smell the streets of Manhattan, like as you described that item right there, that menu item. Mm-hmm. Big time New York vibes right there. That was a good pace setter for your day on the course. I feel like you really led strongly with that food choice. So I commend you for that one.
Yeah. Was it the best thing to eat? Did I feel a little heavy through the front nine?
It did.
Was it worth it? Most definitely. I would do it again in a heartbeat.
Yeah. You know, walk the course. You'll walk it off on the course. No big deal. It's okay.
Yeah. You know, it was a 90 degree cart rule that we may or may not have followed, but you know, there was some walking.
All right. Let me get to that cake. It was at Maggiano. Shout out Maggiano's Little Italy. Friends of ours on Instagram at Always End with Food Pod. We had our Valentine's dinner Saturday night. Full courses, Italian, the whole nine, the fettuccine Alfredo, the chicken parm. It was all there, but it ended with a butter cake called Gigi's Butter Cake from Maggiano's. Mike, this was a soft, pillowy, spongy cake with an unbelievable, just kind of like icicle drizzle layer of cinnamon and sugar, little whipped cream and strawberry sauce on the side. And it might be the best cake I've had in recent memory. Highly recommend it. Have you made a butter cake, Mike? I was wondering if you delve this far deep in your baking so far.
I have not made a butter cake.
Is it on your list?
I'm not sure what I should be. I mean, does it come with a stick of butter coming out of it or something?
Amounts of butter were had in order to make this cake, for sure.
I will say we need to wrap this up because I'm now salivating quite extensively and need to go find something to eat in my kitchen.
Yeah,
so
it's always end with food pod on Instagram if you want to see for yourself. Check this cake out. It was the real deal. I mean, we're still talking about it days later. That's how good it was. So
it's always a good sign.
That's how we end with food here on the Course of Life. Thank you to everyone for tuning in. Another great episode in the books. We'll see everyone next week.